Welcome back to ongoing coverage of the United Astrology Conference. My name is Eric Francis, host of Planet Waves FM, and our guest now is Eric Myers of Asheville, North Carolina. Eric's book is called The Astrology Awakening, Volume 1, The Eclipse of the Ego. I guess if I was going to have something be eclipsed, it would be the ego, wouldn't it? That's a good thing to eclipse, right? So welcome to Planet Waves FM, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
Have we had you on before?
Yes, I think at the Blast.
Got it. Okay, so good. So welcome back.
Thank you.
And you're recently published this book. You've recently published this book, right?
Yes.
And what's basically the story? What are you talking about here?
Well, I mean, the basic idea that I'm writing about is that my sense is that spirituality or more awakened consciousness is not something that's out there, something that is reserved for a privileged few, but it's just the nature of energy, it's the nature of what we're doing here, and we don't realize that. It's been eclipsed by the ego about self-gain, about I need to make a living, I need to have a good relationship, or whatever. We have our own agenda. And my sense is that we're awakening from being contracted in our own personal agenda to opening to all of life. And so my view is that the sun is actually about awakening from ego rather than ego is my view. I see the sun as source energy. What gives us source? Is that spirit or is it the masculine or the ego? It's the more conventional view of the sun.
How would you define ego in your cosmology?
Ego would just be the identification and separation consciousness. Like, I'm me, Eric Myers. I got my own personal story. I got everything that is personal defined as a separateness. And so my view is that that's all relevant. Of course it is. But that's not all there is. And I think that our personal energy, just like the sun radiates out and shines, our personal energy shines away from the separate self into all of life. And that's what awakening is about. I don't pretend that I'm awakened. I just have a lot of interest in the subject matter. And so I've studied a lot of spiritual teachings and my own experiences. And so the awareness that there's more beyond the separate self is the basic idea.
Got it. And so how would this apply, for example, in doing astrology work with a client? You know, can you think of a chart example?
Sure. I mean, my whole approach is that the moon is much more about separation consciousness and the ego. And our dualistic projections of masculine and feminine is the part of how we've organized that. So my view is that all of us come from the moon. That's just being human. That's the requirements to be embodied and to take care of physical needs, to eat and sleep, and everything about self-care is moon stuff. And I really see the sun as the awakening from that into broader expansion. If you think about the fact that 64 million moons fit inside the sun, it's far grander and bigger in scope.
64 million.
64 million, yes.
But we only have one.
So, you know, way back when astrology was started, we were underneath the illusion that the sun and moon were equal. They're, including calling them the luminaries. But my view is that they're not equal at all. In fact, the moon, even though we call it a luminary, doesn't have any source of light. It's only reflecting the light of the sun, just as the separate self reflects the light of spirit. And so it's far bigger. So I really see the sun as the awakening into our bigger self, and the moon is the contracted egoic kind of defense mechanisms and survival kind of mentality.
Needs,
yes.
And that kind of child level of emotion.
Yes. And so some people hear when I talk about this, they think I'm putting down the moon. I'm not. It's just a maturation process. Just like there's nothing wrong with being 4 years old, you don't want to be a four-year-old your entire life. You need to mature and relax these needs, this urgency, and just be open to whatever should unfold in the present. And that, to me, is what the sun is about. It's about presence.
So what is a mature moon? You know, how does the moon manifest in a mature person?
Good. Well, yeah. You think about anything astrologically as a range of consciousness. And more or less, you have maybe low Aries, which is be angry and irritable, and then high Aries, which would be much more direct and empowered in leadership. So my view is that all of our moons are learning to awaken or function more consciously on that spectrum, borrowed by the awareness of the broader sun. And so so there's nothing wrong with being in separation, nothing wrong with being physical and being, you know, in our moon. It's just that we're learning to do it more consciously. And so whatever's going on in anyone's moon in their chart, you got to look at it as that spectrum. What would it look like operating at the more, conscious end of that spectrum?
So do you do that by sign? Do you have a characteristics that, you know, someone with, for example, a Taurus moon would be in four-year-old type consciousness versus how they might be in adult consciousness?
I'm saying that everyone, you know, regardless of sign, houses, aspects, you just look at the whole moon profile and the way that we took care of ourselves. And when we regress, the way we do take care of ourselves now goes back to this less mature, more, you know, strategizing for survival is what the moon is about. There's nothing wrong with surviving. We all need to survive. Mm-hmm. Just who wants to always operate in survival mode? So the point is that whatever's going on with the moon, that's how we take care of ourselves. It's very valid. But we want to expand and relax that in order to be open to all of life. So I don't make judgments that a Taurus moon would be better than a Libra moon.
No, I didn't mean that. What I meant was how, for example, a Taurus moon might manifest as it matures.
Yeah, I mean, early on, you know, someone with a Taurus moon might, you know, seek comfort, or seek pleasure to make themselves feel, you know, comfort food. You know, there's a Taurus moon strategy. And then the more conscious Taurus moon might be just more at peace and relaxation and tranquility in themselves. They don't need to stuff, you know, for, you know, feeling more okay. It's just there's the natural peacefulness and relax, just relaxing in the embodied way of being would be that more conscious Taurus moon that just, hey, I'm okay. Uh-huh. You know, life is natural.
My needs are taken care of. I'm part of the natural order and I can manifest what I need.
Yeah.
And as opposed to having to make a whole quest out of it and dealing with all the attachment level.
Sure. That's a good word for the moon is our attachment. So all the different things that you can throw on the moon, there's a lot of different attachment strategies. Aries would be a different strategy. And also it's not just signs, of course. It's house and aspects to other planets. Mm-hmm. The whole moon profile is the way that I'm seeing it.
Right. And then so that's kind of like the resolution phase. But in the expression part, talking about the sun as being about transcending that.
Yeah, it's ultimately about bridging worlds. Think about everything as energy. And at the transpersonal level, that's all it is. Just a big, enormous exchange of energy, and that's what this is. At the relative view, we contract some of that metaphysical energy into a physical form, and then we become human, and we identify with some of that energy. My name's Eric Myers, and this is my energy and my story. And so we create a story, and we think that we own this energy. And then, we have to give it back. When you die, you're not going to own your body anymore. You got to give it back to nature, to spirit, call it what you will, recycles. And so my view is that bridging worlds, we can relax our attachment to ownership. I call it the egoic takeover, where we assume ownership of spiritual energy for our own purposes. And my sense is that when we awaken, we are in relationship with spirit or call it source energy. That's my view of the sun. And so there's a partnership. I call it the sacred marriage in the book, for bridging the metaphysical possibilities, the creative intentions of spirit into physical form. So the point, of course, is not to leave the moon, but to use it consciously.
Well, we need that vehicle. I mean, there wouldn't be a need for the concept of transpersonal if they weren't personal. They depend on one another.
Yes.
Transcending the ego depends on the idea of the ego, and collective depends on individual.
Yes.
So they're aspects of one another. And there seem to be phases in therapy where taking full possession of that individual aspect of nature, one's nature, is really the only thing you can do, because a lot of people are kind of caught between collective and individual. They live constantly sacrificing themselves, and one of the first things that I've found it's necessary for a lot of people to learn is how to take possession of yourself so that you can then have a self to express
right.
with.
Right. And if you look at it in terms of growth, I mean, that is getting a viable egoic organization is important. Yeah, absolutely. And then my view is that there could be more than that. Once we are able to have that and to feel okay within that, then what are you going to use your energy for? Is it going to be just for your own interests, or is there an interdependence of unity that we're all involved with? And then part of spiritual growth is to, you know, do what your intentions of your chart is to contribute to the broader evolution. So yes, we need to be a strong individual. The point is not to dissolve you know, the separateness and just being oneness is the bridge. You know, Aries is just as important as Pisces, so we got to do it all.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So what else? What else have you got in here? It's a pretty long book. It's about, what, 300 pages?
300 pages, yeah. So I've got stuff in about 2012.
Oh, what's your take on that?
And the Uranus-Pluto square. I mean, that's, you know, my view is that as unpopular as it might sound to some people, a lot of this book is looking at the way astrology is conventionally done as being very influenced by what I call a patriarchal value system, and seeing the sun as the masculine as the centerpiece of that. And I review the various ways that you can find part of that value system that's embedded in our astrological approach and inquiry. And so I give a lot of offerings about how we might view things from a less dualistic and a less patriarchal way to see things. It's just a spiritual value with anything. So there's no judgments. I mean, I see astrology the way it's conventionally done as being quite judgmental. This is good, this is bad, and also very dualistic. This is masculine, this is feminine. Again, all of that might be relevant at the relative level. But Mercury is the planet of relativity, about your own perceptions. And Mercury orbits within Saturn, of the governors or the organizer of separation consciousness. Then Uranus would be a step beyond that into the transpersonal, where things are organized as far as unity consciousness. And Uranus doesn't judge anything, where Saturn might have hierarchies about this is more favorable for you as you go through life. Uranus says, what is the spiritual value of whatever? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, here's an example, is that from the Uranian view, the Ebola virus is awfully important. Okay, or famine, or anything catastrophic, or earthquakes, because they have evolutionary value to thin the herd, so to speak. People don't like to look at it this way.
Or you create a problem that's solved. There's an invent, the necessity being the mother of invention.
Yes.
You have Ebola virus, you're going to need to solve it in some way, and sometimes science makes one breakthrough, and then 20 more breakthroughs come from it.
Yes, is that there's actually an intelligence and an evolutionary purpose to everything. Spirit didn't mess up by creating the Ebola virus, is my view, is that we have to look for how things can actually serve evolution in a non-egoic way. However, at the individual level, of course, it's a personal catastrophe. Oh, my God, I got sick. I got this disease. It's horrific. You know, you have this whole story. So my view is that we need to relax what these preferences are. And I believe a lot of this has been projected onto astrology. Certain things are looked at much more favorably than others. And my view is that everything has its evolutionary value and meaning. Mm-hmm. And so it's inviting a much less judgmental view of astrology itself.
Interesting. Yeah, I forgot what I was going to say. Well, astrology, first of all, is an all-encompassing system. It's all in there, right?
Sure.
So it's all swept into the dial.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely makes sense to look at things a little more objectively, I think, than to come with a prejudgment. But really, what I've noticed about astrology is that each astrology is a reflection of the values of its culture.
Exactly.
It doesn't stand apart from them in any kind of an objective way.
That's
just
right.
Just like an automobile now is programmed with the needs that we have at our time in history and the roads that we have. Some future transportation vehicle is going to be more adapted to the needs of the future.
Yes, and exactly that's the point, is that the astrology reflects our consciousness is what we're talking about here. And so my view is, shouldn't it be our responsibility to reform astrology based on what our consciousness is like now? And I believe that 2012 is about this shift of consciousness through the primarily being egoically driven around self-interest, self-gain. This is what Occupy Wall Street and what the Arab Spring was about, is overthrowing tyrannical, egoic agendas in order for it to be fair for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that is the step in our collective evolution. I believe that, you know, just to be a little bit simplistic about it, I think we're moving from a earlier developmental stage, maybe adolescence, to true spiritual adulthood is what this time is about. Mm-hmm. And being an adult, you don't always get your way. You don't always get, you know, the big paycheck or the big, it's about growth. It's not about gain. And so what I see happening is that we're reaching the crisis point. This is the Uranus-Pluto square, where it's become incredibly obvious the way that we do the economy, this this organization around debt that we have. It's all about competition. Oh my God, I got all this debt. I got to survive. And I talked this morning at the conference, Venus, the Awakened Venus, about what about the idea of having a gift economy where we support other people and everyone benefits and we're not operating from lack. Now, I'm not Pollyannish and think that the bankers on Wall Street are going to just change the way they operate overnight. No, but I think that this time frame is about the awareness that we could operate much more consciously with each other and with resources. Money, oil, you know.
Well, let's set the billionaire bankers aside. I think that even as individuals with thinking we have relatively little, we have a lot that we can share. Even if it's the ability to help someone for a few minutes or to share knowledge or to teach a skill that we have,
yes,
or to in some way open ourselves up, go out of our way a little bit. And if everyone did that a little bit more, it would go a long way toward making everything be happier and easier on the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
So we don't necessarily need the billionaires to write large checks, but if all of us got together and participated more assertively in the real economy, for example, taking care of one another.
Yes.
Which is we do need that. We do have this beautiful need that's resulted in spice markets and things like that that I think are the very epitome of human development.
Mm-hmm.
The simple marketplace where you can buy dinner and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all taking part in that. It wouldn't be the same thing to have one guy standing on the street selling spices as it is to have a market and everyone's there's a synergistic effect created by the most humble little marketplace of 10 mm-hmm. vendors together.
Yeah, and just this awareness of greater interdependence with each other, with nature, with resources, with the universe. And astrology so beautifully shows us of how much we all share the same basic core energies, Venus, Jupiter, you know, etc.
We are all tapping into the same solar system.
We're all
expressed by the same solar system.
We're all one. You know, these energies flow through everything, and they're part of all of life. And so I think that we're hopefully reaching a greater not only awareness, but then the implementation of that into life. And it's going to take a very dramatic form of perhaps some clashing that we've seen with the types of consciousness that might resist this because they have a lot at stake with the paradigms and with the business practices and with the legacies that they've worked so hard to, you know, keep in place.
Even conceptually, I mean, even the climate change denial.
Sure.
Right. So if you've been doing climate change denial for 20, 30 years and you've known what's happening and you've been in a position of responsibility, you have an ego level interest in making sure that you perpetuate your denial and inflict it on others in some way so that you don't lose face by being the guy who denied climate change for 30 years and then we realize, well, you're responsible for a huge chunk of the devastation of the earth. You're going to want to defend against that, generally speaking.
Yeah. And this type of dynamic is going to play out in a wide variety of fields and institutions and paradigms and what have you. And the way that I see it is that this Uranus-Pluto square is as revolutionary as the 1960s, and it's going to continue for so long. I mean, we've been in it now for a little while, and we're just getting the first exact hits.
Yep.
We had seven of them.
Well, Rick Tarnas demonstrated very well that these influences go.
Yes.
You can look, you can see distinct Uranus-Pluto things going into the mid-2000s, probably the election of Obama, the emergence of a focused form of activism coming out, and then you could really see it in 2011 spreading like wildfire across geographic regions. That's a quality of the Uranus-Pluto events, where basically the revolutions move faster than the news can travel.
Right.
And that was only in 2011. And now it's been a little quiet this year. We've had a lot of retrograde planets. Just wait, I know. But I'm thinking the retrogrades are, you know, lying in wait. And then, you know, as the Venus transit happens, so that's sort of like a temporary suspension of retrograde.
Yeah.
Right, because it's that rare moment that can only happen with a retrograde. Right.
Right. And here's what's so exciting about this, is that the Uranus-Pluto squares, the final and the seventh one is 2015. Then you're going to be separating for a few years, and then we've got some tremendous events. Mainly, you have Pluto in late Capricorn. Saturn's going to catch up with it. Jupiter's going to be there. We have this stellium of Jupiter, Saturn, Capricorn bridging from late Capricorn, then Jupiter-Saturn conjunction in Aquarius in 2020, which is going to begin that whole cycle about the way we organize society, Jupiter-Saturn, in an Aquarian way. So we're going to go through eight more years, of tremendous upheaval, and then the beginning of a 20-year cycle, Jupiter, Saturn, and Aquarius, about restructuring society itself to be more aligned with these Aquarian, understandings and ideals and paradigms.
Awesome. Yes. Good. Well, I think that we have an opportunity to make some solutions during the next 10 or 15 years. If we can care about one another and care about the whole business more, I mean, this is really the thing. I mean, the kind of astrology that we're doing at Planet Waves involves a lot of pointing out collective reality.
Yeah.
Without sacrificing individual growth. I mean, clearly, caring about collective reality in a healthy way is about being mature individually. It does take a modicum of maturity.
Yes.
To be able to take care of yourself well enough to get enough rest every night to be a good therapist during the day.
Sure.
And then you have the right, you party the way you want to party on the weekend when your clients are far away, and then you're ready for Monday morning again, right? That takes maturity. So we're constantly trying to guide consciousness in the direction of a collective level, and it's pretty tricky. It's pretty tricky to point out to people, well, but what you want what you do to affect others, and you want what they do to affect you. First of all, it does.
Mm-hmm.
We all have to maintain a certain level of decorum riding the subway, for this basic example, right?
Sure.
It's only so crazy you can get or how loud you can play your music riding the New York City subway, right? So we understand it on that level, but I think there's a lot more that we have to offer, and we can begin to shift our attention gradually and invest in those things.
And part of that shifting of attention is that this is really what the premise of the book is that we're expanding our identification beyond the parameters of our skin boundary. Because think about energy, just like the sun, it radiates out. When you light a candle, is the analogy I have in the book, the moon is like the wax, the flame is like the sun. And when you light a candle, it lights up the entire room. And your consciousness is projected out into everything.
Yes.
And that is your relationship in the external world is really a reflection of relationship with yourself. And part of the awakened view is that we're all existing really in the interiors of our own consciousness, collectively with each other, and we're stimulating of that awareness for everyone. And when more and more people get that, like, holy cow, I'm interacting really with my version of you. There's no Eric Francis. It's my version of Eric Francis that I have a whole story about. I'm looking at you, and you don't exist. You're just a figment of my imagination. And that's part of the awakened view, is the acceptance of that reality and the embrace of it. And we all do that for each other. Mm-hmm. And we're all catalyzing this awareness. And when we get it, we're like, oh, we smack our foreheads, be like, oh, my God. The world isn't really against me. It is me. And that's the awakened view. And when we have the humility that we are all one, basically, and then we are going to love each other, not just talk about loving each other, but we will, because as a famous philosopher said, do unto others as you do to yourself, because they are you. Mm-hmm. They are a reflection of you. The sacred mirrors is the idea here.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what I do is I'm just a student of a lot of this understandings. I'm not an awakened person, but I see myself as a translator. And so a lot of works of Ajashanti or Sri Ramana Maharshi, Byron Katie, several others, Eckhart Tolle, I just bring a lot of their viewpoints into how we can understand it astrologically from mm-hmm. this more awakened view. That's really what I try.
Awesome. So when I'm looking for someone to help me summarize the viewpoint of one of these modern authors, I'm going to go right to you for my fact-checking.
Good.
That's all right, because I have not read Eckhart Tolle, but if I need a summary, I will call upon you.
I would say that Eckhart Tolle's book, The Power of Now, is the most finest book ever written on the sun. That's not really about the sun. It's about presence and awareness and being in the now. To me, that's really what the sun is about. It's not about ego or the masculine. To me, that's a projection from a dualistic distortion, basically.
No, clearly there's a radiance involved with the sun. There's an illuminating quality without it. Every modicum of energy,
right?
Unless you go to the quantum level, every modicum of energy we can...
It's our source energy.
Name. Trees are made of sunshine. You burn
yes,
wood,
exactly.
You're burning solar energy,
right.
Basically.
Yeah, that's our source energy. And so part of what I'm offering is basically, without sounding too dramatic, you know, and I don't give myself all the credit for this. I think many other authors, Ray Merriman wrote about it in his book, Evolutionary Astrology, and several other authors. But I think that we're really shifting the paradigm to seeing the sun as our source energy, awakening from ego rather than ego itself. And that is the main drum that I'm banging. And so this book is really, it's not about the sun per se. That's the thread that runs through it. But I address all the planets from an awakened view. Mm-hmm. And my chapter in the Astrology Next Generation project is about planets and spiritual awakening. So I want to plug that for a second. And so we can look at everything as being aligned with the ego, or everything as awakening from that and using that energy aligned with spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. And so our view of Jupiter or Neptune or all the rest of them becomes different.
Say your website, Eric.
Soul Vision Consulting.
Soul Vision Consulting. And you're a consulting astrologer. People can come to you to do work. Are you a therapist also?
I have my master's in counseling, and I don't market myself as a therapist. I see myself more as an astrology counselor.
Yep, but you have the background.
I have the background.
You have some training.
Oh, yeah.
And your partner's a therapist, is that right?
She's more of a therapist. Yeah, here's the difference. She's got a Scorpio North Node. I got the Aquarius North Node.
Right.
And so I'm much more interested in the paradigms and the astrology and that kind of thing.
And she does that. She likes to do the depth work and
yeah.
Go in the diving.
Yeah, my joke is that I'm going to, you know, hit you with the boom of the chart, and here's the message. And if you want to talk about what's going on with your boyfriend every Wednesday afternoon, talk to her. I don't want to do that.
Excellent. So we've been speaking with Eric Myers, and his book that we've been talking about for the last half hour is called The Astrology of Awakening, Volume 1, Eclipse of the Ego. Could be a good movie. Eric, thank you for joining us on Planet Waves FM. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And I have a feeling that our listeners really dug this conversation. I can usually tell what they're going to like. So send people out here if you think somebody wants to be interviewed. And once again, thanks for contributing to
I appreciate it so much, Eric.
Ongoing coverage of the United Astrology Conference here in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's May 25th, 2012. We're wrapping this up at 2:20. On Friday afternoon, May 25th. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you in a little while.